I think every business owner or business leader will agree with that statement, is that the easiest and the most reliable way to get amazing talents is to work with your network and your employees' networks. And that's where social can do amazing things.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by Audience Plus. Our mission is to shake out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals and stir up fresh conversation, all to help you connect your brand with the right audience at the right time. Let's raise a glass. Welcome back to the Content Cocktail Hour. Jonathan Gandolf here, co-founder and CEO of Audience Plus. Today, I am thrilled to be joined by another co-founder and CEO, another marketer turned founder turned leader in the MarTech space. I think this is going to be a really fun conversation. I'm thrilled to be joined by Imric Arnoux, co-founder and CEO of AgoraPulse. Imric, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and a little bit about what you're working on now, and then we'll jump right into the conversation.
Oh, my background. You want to start where? Super quick. I'm a lawyer by trade. I was trained as an M&A lawyer. I started my first business in 2000, so I've been an entrepreneur for 25 years. AgoraPulse is the second product that I built. The first one was already social media and already a SaaS product, the one we started in 2000. So I've always been in SaaS and always been in somehow communities. It was called communities before, and social media. And AgoraPulse, and so I pivoted a lot. I failed a lot, pivoted a lot. And when I was early on with my co-founder and we were like a bunch and a handful of employees, I've always owned marketing and go-to-market. So that's the thing I'm from. Not necessarily sales, really marketing, because the first product we built, there was no sales. And the second product we built, AgoraPulse, that we started in 2011, we only got our first salesperson in 2016. So that just to give you an idea of how we built it. It was very good. It was very PLG, product-led growth, and inbound and low touch, you know, no touch, very, very frictionless go-to-market, and so on and so forth. And we completely changed that. We're now totally marketing and sales-led, moved the needle completely the other way. And that's, you asked me, what are you up to now? I'm up to succeeding at transitioning from the inbound, low sales, low friction, mostly product-led, to a more outbound, like not outbound in the sense of cold call and, you know, going to talk to strangers, but how we do create our opportunities instead of waiting for them to raise their hand and come to us.
Yeah, I've heard like it references like inbound led outbound is kind of the new trendy, buzzy way to talk about it. But there's a lot there. I think the social, you know, some of the failures that you've had as a founder and entrepreneur, and then the PLG to the marketing and sales led motion. I have a lot of follow-up questions, but this is the Content Cocktail Hour. So before I get to ask you those, Imric, we always ask all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays?
I'm not going to be a fun guest. I do not drink.
I'm glad I didn't tee it up as it's Friday afternoon in Paris. What wine are you enjoying?
I only drink one kind of beverage. It's sparkled water, and I drink 2 liters of it every single day in my big, big drink. It actually has my logo on it, which I like.
Look at that product placement. I love it. That's awesome. I think that's pretty fun. 2 liters of sparkling water is a pretty impressive answer. We haven't had that one
before. I hate still water. I think it's boring, and the sparkles give me that in my mouth. So
I love it. Yeah. I love it. Well, cool. All right. So let's dig into the rest of the conversation. So I'm really interested in starting with, you referenced this a little bit in your intro, like you called it communities before social. Like you called it social, but you know, social maybe came around the 2006, 8, 10, that kind of time
after
frame.
After Facebook, post-Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But you kind of said you've been in social since 2000. It was just called communities. So maybe from your perspective, I'd be really interested in kind of hearing about the timeline of social media and social media marketing and how much it's evolved since you've been involved in it.
How it got started was ICQ, and you know, like the chats, do you remember ICQ?
Oh yeah.
Bought by AOL. So all the online chat, MSN Messenger after that, all these online chats and forums. These were the ancestors of social media, and they already existed in 1997, 1996 already. They evolved into the new era of social media. It was called the Web 2, where actually it was Because the old one were kind of for geeks only. If you were a random normal, you know, mother or father like me, you couldn't figure it out. It was too hard and too complicated. But everybody could figure out Facebook and then Twitter and then Instagram and then everything else. So the revolution there was like those tools that were very hard to understand and comprehend, they became very easy and everybody started to adopt them. But the core need was there since day one. It was there since the beginning of times. Human beings are meant to interact with each other. They are meant to have conversations. They are meant to argue. They are meant to all these things, right? And the web has just facilitated this in a geeky, technical, complicated way at first, but then in a much easier way. So what happened next is that you only got a couple in the early 2010s, you know, like you got 3-4 max. Now you have, and TikToks and Snapchats and Quora and Pinterest. And like now you have dozens of potential of places where you can go and actually be social with others online. If you look at that timeline, what we're going through is a complexification of the landscape. And now it's very complex. So where do I go? I don't know. Where are my customers hanging out? I don't know. And that's where I need to be. So I'd say that's the timeline. But to conclude, I'd say this is not going anywhere. It's either going to become even more complex than it is already today, or stay the same, which is already complex. But what it's not going to do is disappear, because what's not going to happen to the human race is that they stop talking to each other
or
hating each other or bumping into.
Yeah. I kind of, you know, it's kind of the same thing. I say there's obviously a lot of conjecture right now in the search space about SEO versus what I'm being seen called GEO now with all the generative tools. And people ask me, and I think it's still a little too early. At least I haven't seen really strong data on what's driving GEO. I've seen and read about good SEO practices driving good GEO results. But what I tell marketers is like, the behavior of search is not going anywhere. We're always going to be searching for answers, whether we're asking questions to a generative tool or we're searching an index like a Google. And I like how you're framing social of like, it's not about the technology, it's about the connection between human beings. And I think that's really worth like thinking about when we're talking about.
It's about the need it fulfills. Yeah, same as search.
Exactly.
That need is profoundly human. It's not going away.
Yeah, I love that. So speaking of connecting individuals and using social for that, does it feel like we're kind of entering a new chapter of social? I remember I was at Exact Target in the early days of the content marketing and thought leadership space. And we were, I think, quick adopters on the social media marketing. And I remember everything then, and even for the years after that, was about like the brand page, right? It was like using the brand page to build the social media kind of network for your company. Now we're seeing companies are leaning more on their individual people or their employees to build the brand, like build their personal brand, but for the corporate brand.
Yeah.
That paired with everything happening in AI, it feels like we're kind of like entering this another like new chapter of social. Do you feel that happening at Agorapulse?
Yeah. So you're B2B, I'm B2B. So that's why you're saying what you're saying. B2B, absolutely. In B2B, you need to leverage your people. If you're not leveraging your people, and it's mostly going to be on LinkedIn, let's face it. That is for B2B, the social network that businesses and their people are going to build a presence and credibility on. If you're B2C, it's totally different game. So you're probably, if you're Coca-Cola, you probably don't care about your employees. I put it this way, you're doing stuff on social.
Right. They don't need to.
Yeah, you don't need to.
Your buyers are on LinkedIn.
You need something. Yeah, they're not on LinkedIn and you need something else. Unless it's for employer branding and hiring, then it's a different story. Yeah. But yeah, it's absolutely the truth. It's one of my pet peeves, actually. One of the things that we are striving for at Agorapulse is to help people who are using social to prove the impact of their work. And for B2B marketers who are doing social, the impact of their work is going to be minimal if all they have is their brand page, is their company page, or their company accounts, wherever they are. The thing I'm obsessed with is like, okay, what can we do to leverage the team members to get more noise, get more reach, get more people interested into what we say? And that's totally the direction that B2B businesses need to take. Like, how do we embark the team so they become our voice as well? And then we multiply our ability to touch people because they are bought in the vision and what we want to do on social. Let me give you one very specific example, which I'm very excited about. It's hiring. when you think about isn't hiring the most difficult thing to do for a business?
It may be the most critical as well, right?
Of course. And where mistakes are the most expensive and where waiting 6 more months before having the right person is the most damaging and so on and so forth. When you think about how you hire the best people you've hired in your life, where did they come from? The best of the best.
Your network.
Yeah, mine. They all came from my network and my employees' network. 100%. And I think every business owner or business leader will agree with that statement, is that the easiest and the most reliable way to get amazing talents is to work with your network and your employees' networks. And that's where social can do amazing things. Because if you have a job opening for a web developer or a developer, and you ask your, I have 45 developers today. You ask your 45 developers, okay, guys, here's the job opening. I would love for you to promote it. And here's an easy way to do it. Here's the link, the text, image, all we can use. Please share it. Your chances of finding a good developer that knows one of your developers, oh, I'd love to work with my buddy John from Agorapulse. Let's apply there because I'm fed up with the company I'm working for now. Your chances of hiring the best developer possible is multiplied by 10. We've actually conducted tests with that and the results are staggering. It's so much better. You increase your likelihood to hire the best employees by such a magnitude that it's incredible. So that's one example of where of leveraging your people on social media makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I love that example. That trickles down, right? You get better developers, you get better product, you get better product, you get better customer. Like it just, yeah, it all starts with that kind of network effect on social. So you mentioned something there though, in that answer I'm going to grill you on. You said measuring success of social. I feel like there's a million different use cases for social, probably a million different ways to measure success. You know, in the early days that I keep referencing, it was just follower counts and impressions and that sort of thing, which is probably still a part of the formula. How do you encourage your clients or just marketers in general to measure the impact of social?
Well, first of all, I encourage them to be very clear on what they want to achieve with social. Like, and don't have expectations that are crazy about it, and don't have expectations that nobody will care about. So like when you set your expectation for this is what I want to do with social, don't go so high that you're never going to be able to achieve it and you're not going to be trusted. Or and don't go solo as your CEOs don't give a damn about what you're going to do with social. Hence, you have no budget, no team, no nothing, and it's going to be a waste of time. So find something that's interesting enough so the C-levels and the VPs and the leadership of the company is going to say, oh, yeah, that's interesting. Okay, go ahead, pursue that. I like that. Here's 5K so you can, you know, do something about it. And stick to that thing. Don't try to be everything and anything to everyone on social because you can't. It's easy to be on all networks. It's easy to post twice a day on each of them. It's easy to do videos and photos and text and carousels and reels and this and that. But if you do that, what are you doing? As any marketer would say, or any good professional would say, you're spreading yourself too thin, so you're not going to achieve anything. Yeah. So pick the thing that you believe is the most likely to achieve that thing that you sold to your leadership and stick to it. And measure what's happening from that thing in terms of audience. Because if there's no audience on social for you, then you're not going to be seen by anyone. So there will be no engagement. There will be no click. There will be no opportunities. There will be nothing. So audience is important. And it is vanity if it's the wrong audience. But if it's the right audience, it's not vanity. If the people following me on LinkedIn are all social media managers, growing that is not vanity. It's actually exactly what I want.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have to balance quality and quantity, of course, when you're looking at audience metrics. Then you look at engagement metrics. And if you have the right audience, then that engagement is not vanity because it's telling you the right people who are the ones I want to influence are actually engaging with what I say and what I share with them, meaning that I'm saying and sharing stuff that they are interested into. So I look good. If I look good by the people who want to buy my stuff, and it's going to end up in being good for the business. So that is not vanity as far as you're looking at the quality of what you're getting and your audience. And then the last thing, the shameless plug alert about the Agorapulse ROI tracking is that you do want to send them to your site for something. Make that something super interesting and low commitment. A downloadable, a video they can watch, a webinar they can watch even live or on replay. Something that's going to help them, really help them. Work hard on making sure that the content is going to be super helpful. I always tell my team, this is content they would pay for. Is this content they would pay for? Yes or no? So if the answer is no, Was it worth doing? Was it worth creating? We have a tendency to create a lot of content, but not always a lot of content people would pay for. And if you have that content they would pay for, and you propose that content to them on LinkedIn with the right messaging around it and the right amount of fun and video and presenting it a way that makes them say, I really want to check that out, then you're going to start having leads. And those leads you're going to be able to attribute to, that's what I've done on social. And one thing ticking to another, you're going to start measuring lead generation and quality of lead generation and MQLs and SALs and SQLs and so on and so forth. And yes, you can absolutely create business from social media if it's done the right way.
Is this content that somebody would pay for is such a good heuristic for creating quality content? And I think that's especially fascinating coming from your perspective where so many times social is, it is reliant on creating content, right? And I think, like you mentioned in that answer, if your metric is, hey, we need to post twice per day to this channel, twice per day to this channel, and that's what success is the quantity of posting, the quality is probably not going to be something that people are willing to pay for. Yeah. So I absolutely love that you're kind of using that once they're on the site to drive the quality of content that your team is creating.
Yeah. When you post on social, you don't necessarily have to post stuff that people would pay for. You can do entertaining, you can do human, like authentic, whatever, like things that people laugh about it, people cry about it, whatever. You can do stuff that makes people react in a positive way. It's when you want them to go to your website and give you their email. That's exactly. They need to be able to feel like they would pay for that. And they're actually paying for that with their email.
Right, exactly. All right, I'm gonna change gears here a little bit. I'm gonna ask a selfish question, entrepreneur to entrepreneur. You mentioned you've had a lot of successes and a lot of failures kind of through your entrepreneurial journey. What's maybe one failure that you've learned from that other entrepreneurs could learn from?
I'm gonna cite the one that the most painful one. It's always HR mistakes. It's hiring the wrong person, keeping them too long and hurting you, the business and the team, because you've made the wrong decision and you procrastinated on the person. And most of the time, it's not their fault. It's not the fault of that person. It's our fault. It's my fault. And it's me who was not clear enough about who I needed and what I needed to be done and picked the wrong person because I actually wasn't sure what needed to be done. And then when that became clear, it also became clear that person was not the right person for that, but I didn't clarify that in the first place. And that's my fault. It's a big word. It's my inexperience that's at the beginning of it. And then not wanting to have the hard conversation with them. I love this quote from a friend. It's the difference between being nice and being kind. And if you've hired the wrong person, but it's your fault, and now you have to take the responsibility of having the hard conversation to let them go. Being nice is not letting them go. Being kind is letting them go because you have them in a job that they can't accomplish. So they're never going to be successful and it's your fault. It's not going to feel like a gift, but the only gift you can give them is to free them to find another job where they can actually be successful. And that's being kind.
I love that. That reminds me a lot of, I'm a big fan of the radical candor kind of thought and matrix. It's you care personally, but challenge directly. To have those difficult conversations. And I love that nuance you highlighted of the difference between being kind and nice. That's really good. Appreciate that. Emmerich, we always end all of these conversations by asking our guests, what's an unpopular opinion that you have as it pertains to B2B sales or marketing?
One that's very connected to what I do. Do you know Chris Walker? You probably know Chris Walker. Yeah, okay. Chris Walker became famous because he went on LinkedIn and became very famous on LinkedIn saying, you shouldn't track anything. Tracking is bullshit and you should create demand and not capture demand and all that kind of stuff. And tracking software is evil and you shouldn't trust them and you shouldn't use them. If that is popular, then the unpopular opinion I have is that if you're not tracking anything, of course, when you're tracking stuff, you're mostly tracking tips of icebergs because tracking cannot capture everything. He's right on that. If you're doing a podcast and a lot of people come from that podcast, you're not going to be able to track it because it's impossible, technically impossible. But if you're not tracking anything, then you're not going to see tips of icebergs. And if you don't see any tips of icebergs, then you probably do not have any icebergs under the surface of the water. So my unpopular opinion to Chris Walker is that you should track because you need to see where the tips are so you can navigate them and you can double down on them. Because if you see a tip, there's probably an iceberg underneath it. That's my one. And the other more generalist unpopular opinion is that I think branding is as important as lead gen in B2B marketing. Yeah. If in B2B marketing, all you do is in this hardcore cold lead gen, the cost of, you know, the conversion rates of each step of the funnel, and then the cost at the end is going to be very, very high. If you have done a great job at branding, at creating a good image for yourself, for your brand, for your product, and for yourself as a leader, people are going to be more likely to convert at each step of the funnel. And at the end of the day, the cost, the CAC will be much better. You have to do both. You cannot just do one and please the CEOs who don't understand marketing. You have to sell them what they want to hear, which is, yeah, I'm going to do leads and SCLs and SQLs. Don't worry, my CEO. If they're not a marketer and they don't understand that, but you have to be doing the right thing on the back end, which is investing into the branding and the image of your company and your product. So when people land on your site, they're more likely to trust you and like you and go through the funnel.
I love those two opinions independently, but I like them paired together because it's interesting. You're like measuring everything, but also like branding is very important, which inherently is the thing that people always talk about in marketing being not measurable. So I like kind of the paradox of those two opinions, and I like that you believe in both.
There are ways to measure it though. If you're focusing your brand building effort in one specific country, then you can look at the evolution of your funnel math in that country versus the others. So it's exactly. More complex. It takes more resources and a lot of focus, but it is doable to see, oh, we've invested in branding for 1 year in this country and our conversion rate are twice as high as this other country where we did no branding. I know that the guys from HubSpot did that. Obviously, they have a HubSpot means, so they can't do that, but they proved to HubSpot leadership that branding was a good investment because they did it exactly this way.
Yeah. I love that so much. Really appreciate that thought. Emmerich, if people want to learn more from you or learn more about AgoraPulse, what's the best way to do that?
Follow me on LinkedIn. and reach out. If you want to talk to me, I will always respond to LinkedIn invite that have a note that says, hey, I'll listen to you on the podcast or that podcast. I always accept those invites, not the others because I have too many. I don't know. And I don't want my LinkedIn to become a zoo, but...
Shocking. The social media CEO says connect with him on social media if you want to learn more from him. We could have seen that one coming. Emmerich, thank you so much for your time today. To all of our watchers, all of our listeners, thanks for joining. I know we all learned a lot along the way. Until next time, same place. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by Audience Plus. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us at audienceplus.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.